Want an easy way to stay up to date with the latest news and trends in the NBA? Listen to the NBA Daily Ding podcast Monday through Friday. Wake up and turn up the NBA Daily Ding to stay informed on all things NBA here at The Athletic and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to The Athletic NBA Show, Monday through Friday,
on The Athletic Podcast Network. Welcome to tampering.
For this beautiful game of basketball that we all love and talk about every single day.
With Sam and
Amy. To be able to bring people together.
What do you do, baby?
Reportedly at the center of an NBA investigation
into tampering accusations.
And the message to executives in the league is
stop talking about players on other teams.
What did I do?
The charges filed.
Impermissible contact.
Was it right or wrong?
Tampering charges are really difficult to prove.
You know me, I talk.
Awkward to even talk about them. Can't even mention Deans anymore.
Actually, what I like to play with Kevin Durant.
The trial you want with tampering.
They're always ahead of the rules.
It's not rocket science.
Everybody, we don't have to tamper with the guys.
I didn't tamper. I'm just telling you what happened. I'm just telling you what happened.
Hello and welcome to the Tampering Podcast. I'm Sam Amick, NBA national writer here as always. Today on the pod, we are diving into all things Lakers, all things Warriors, all things play-in tournament. We got some chaos going on in the Western Conference. We got two guys here who are the experts on both fronts. Bill Oram, repping LA, my friend. You got sunglasses on today, William. What is the story here?
You know, listen, it's a podcast, not a video cast. The people didn't need to know that I'm wearing sunglasses, but
oh, they
because
did.
I'm on a
they
Zoom
did.
With you, I was playing it for laughs. But now we have to let everybody else in on the things that I happen to think are funny, which everyone else will just think what a loser. So thank you, Sam. Appreciate us starting it off on that.
That was the worst delivery of, like, I said it, put it on the tee for you. It was good off camera humor. You had a great line before we jumped on about how the Lakers.
Would you like me to say it again? I'll say
no,
it.
No, I'm just going to steal your material. If you're gonna shrink like a violet when I put you on stage, man, that's
you
not
put me
your
on stage.
Style.
You put
that's
me
not...
on blast.
All right, fair enough. You do look like a guy out of, you know, kind of leaving Las Vegas or something. A little Nick Cage vibe. Look like you had a rough night. Got the hat. Got the scruffy beard. I'm always happy to see you, Bill. We also have Anthony Slater, Warriors extraordinaire. And once upon a time, kind of like, you know, also Lakers coverage, kind of fly-by-night guy who knows the Lakers very well. Mr. Slater, what's going on, brother?
I know these two upstart small market teams very well, just trying to crawl into the play-in and fight off the Suns and Jazz, the big market Suns and Jazz.
Actually, I'm going to correct you there. These two incredibly valuable franchises, but one slightly yes. more valuable than the other. According to Forbes, the Golden State Warriors are marginally more valuable than the Lakers. And as friend and colleague Mark Spears of The Undefeated tweeted earlier today, it's not something I thought we would ever say. So Joe Lacob, I'm sure, is enjoying that little nugget. Don't you think, Slater?
I think Chase Center might have something to do with that. The building of a massive cash cow on the water of San Francisco, which, by the way, is reopened with fans. And it's been... Sam, are you ever going to make it down, Sam?
I'll get there eventually. I was, you know, I don't know. See, you guys were giving me a hard time off the air again about how I was saying a few positive things about Zoom access. And of course I want to be back in the locker room, but that's not happening yet. So every time I think about driving down the road, especially, I mean, Slater, as you know, the Warriors games for me are about, about 3 hours round trip, 3.5 hours. So the idea of going all the way down so I can, I mean, I can have your company and that would be a highlight of my day. But beyond that, the incentive is just not there yet.
Yeah, they're hosting some games this week that matter. The Jazz and Suns are both in town. The Grizzlies next Sunday might be for the play-in, or for the 8 seed, I should say. And then they probably, you know, I assume they're probably going to be going down to like Staples or something for the play-in, but that's something big.
Well, let's jump off there, because this play-in stuff, man, it's such an interesting conversation. You know, the league goes to this format. They obviously did a different version of this in the bubble, but first time we've got 7 and 8, 9 and 10, they couldn't have written this script any better and in a more compelling way, so long as it ends, you know, with a certain ending to the story. But disaster might strike for the NBA here. They've got some of their biggest stars kind of compromised because, Bill, your Lakers have obviously had a really tough time keeping their head above water with all the injuries. And for anybody who hasn't peeked at the standings lately, just to break it down there, we got Lakers, as we record on Monday, sitting at 38-30, right ahead of those Warriors, 35-33. And if you don't know the format, 7 would play 8, and the winner of that game would move on to play the winner of 9-10. You know, 7 and 8 only has to win once to advance.
The loser would go down and play the winner of 9-10.
Correct. Did I say that incorrectly?
Yeah, okay. You said the winner.
You have a future as a copy editor. Thank you, brother. But yeah, like the the Warriors-Lakers thing, Slater, I'll throw it to you because you had such an interesting moment with Steph Curry the other day. On a Zoom call, you asked him a question that you were well aware how obvious the answer was, but you wanted to have him address it, which was, do you think the NBA might enjoy a Warriors-Lakers play-in from a, you didn't say from a rating standpoint, but that was the inference. And Steph just stared at that camera, shook his head. Everybody knew what he meant. Like, you know, of course. And the Warriors would love nothing better than to knock the champs out. It's just kind of pretty wild how this.
I think they might like Portland in there, if they were being honest. I don't think they necessarily want to see the Lakers now. I mean, the fact that it's a kind of a free swing, and if you lose, then you get the winner of what will probably be Memphis, San Antonio, which, by the way, the Warriors are not secure in 8 at all. They have a kind of a clash against Memphis this week to even try to be 8. But, you know, it's interesting from the topic we're talking about. It would strike a perfect balance for the league if Warriors, Lakers are, you know, that you get that showcase game in the play-in. Lakers move on, and, you know, whoever loses that game still does move on, and you still get first-round series for the Lakers and Warriors. But like you said, one of those two is going to be at risk of elimination. And the shocking thing is that we're actually, and I know we're about to swing this into a larger Lakers conversation. This is what we thought the Warriors' life was going to be. This is what we've talked all season. Like, they are a play-in team. Like, which seed might they get?
And they get more dangerous the closer they get to that time. That's the thing that makes it even more interesting is they've become that team you don't want to play. I mean, Bill, we got to get you to dive in, man. Like, we've been reading your coverage, and you and I talk pretty consistently, but, and I know it's harder over Zoom to take a pulse and get mood and everything, but what's kind of the mood and the level of panic over there? Because this is not the spot that they thought they'd be in, even with all these injuries.
Yeah, I wouldn't describe it as a level of panic. It's been kind of interesting to watch the Lakers sort of evolve to embrace the reality of their circumstances over the last couple of months. You know, because when Anthony Davis got hurt, they were right there in the hunt in the Western Conference. I think they were only a couple of games back at first when LeBron got hurt a month later. So there was a real sense, you know, even in mid-March, that the Lakers still had a chance of, being the one seed. I remember they got kind of within a game of Utah right before LeBron got injured, and we asked him about it. He's like, listen, that's not a priority of ours, you know, but if it's there, why not go get it? And so now you fast forward a month and a half, they're down here toiling in at 7, and they've had a pretty healthy perspective on it, which is, you know, if we can get healthy, you know, we believe that we are a team that, you know, that no one wants to face, and that we are as good as anybody at full strength. The problem is we haven't seen them at full strength. But, and I wrote this today as part of a thing about LeBron potentially returning this week. At this point, there's much more evidence that the Lakers are not a championship contender this year, or that they can't repeat, than that they can. That said, like, they are a terrifying matchup in the first round, or, you know, really at any point for a team. You know, like, look at Phoenix having one of the great years in franchise history. Chris Paul's an MVP candidate, and your reward is potentially as the two seed to face the Lakers. I mean, that is a terrible draw for them. And I think the Lakers feel like, you know, LeBron is kind of the guy you can sort of count on to be himself when he comes back, and AD's finally hit his rhythm. You've got some other issues. You've got issues with Andre Drummond and kind of so forth. But I think all things considered, and considering the setbacks they've had this year, they feel like they're in decent position, and a lot better, by the way, than a week ago. If you'd asked me this question after they lost to the Raptors last Sunday, I think we were all kind of ready to close the book on the Lakers and their season. And they've had a couple of moments since then, you know, a nice win against Denver on the heels of that loss to the Raptors. Obviously, they got blown out by the Clippers. Then they had a close loss to the Blazers, which has basically cemented them at 7. But then a win last night against the Suns. And I think that one was, you know, that was probably their best win against a contending level team, you know, certainly since the injuries. And it also helped illustrate where the Suns might have some trouble against the Lakers. So, I mean, there's certainly some sunshine in the Lakers future at this point. At least their outlook is a little sunnier than it would have been a week ago, which explains the shades, Sam Amick.
that you don't have on anymore. I was going to say, if you're going to drop the puns, you got to throw them back on. I also don't love how you don't lean into your puns in real life, in real time, like you do on Twitter. You need to be consistent, because on Twitter, that would have
been... My wife would disagree with you.
Well, yeah, that's fair. Well, in that moment, I just wasn't feeling it. I'm just saying, get that coffee in your veins. Slater,
I did a podcast with Bill last week, and he was throwing shovel on the grave, and two regular season wins, and he has flipped the script.
I think this is where I land on the Lakers. I don't think they're winning the championship this year. I think that too much has happened, and I think it would just be Pollyannish to say, oh, they're going to win because they have LeBron and AD, and that's the best two-man combo in the league, and therefore they're going to be fine no matter what happens. Like, the regular season matters. Continuity matters. Like, having LeBron and AD miss a combined 60 games needs to matter, I think, in this league. That said, if there was a team that can kind of throw it together or throw it against the wall and win some series and then hope things get weird, I think it would be the Lakers and LeBron. We saw him take the Cavs to the finals out of the four seed in 2018. Completely different situation, completely different conferences, much tougher matchups along the way for the Lakers. But there was a moment a couple weeks ago or 10 days ago after one of their losses where Anthony Davis was like, at the end of the day, we're still the defending champs. And it was like a light bulb went off in his head and he goes, yeah, we're the defending champs. It was almost like he was having that realization in real time that they kind of needed to start acting like they were the defending champions and stop acting like, the victim. And I do think that they have started to embrace that swagger and mentality a little bit more since they got leveled by the Raptors.
Wasn't last night part of that? I'm watching that game last night thinking that this is the time of year where the mind games start. It felt like a message sending game, like you said earlier, and you're right. The idea that Phoenix was out there, I believe, at full bore. I don't think they were missing anybody of consequence.
Cam Johnson?
No, Cam was out. Okay. Jay Crowder is the one that every time they don't have Jay and then they lose and people don't mention that they didn't have Jay, it drives me crazy because he's been really good for them. But Cam's had a good year. But nonetheless, nothing compared to what the Lakers have been through and are going through. And they go out and they handle them. And that's with Chris Paul on the floor and Devin Booker having a really tough night. I know he got to the line quite a bit, but he just wasn't playing like himself. That felt like one where from Phoenix to the rest of the field, the thing I think the Lakers still have on everybody is that, in other years, I think we would have more teams with more continuity and more experience that would be a threat to a team like the Lakers, a reigning champion. This year, man, it's just all over the map because Milwaukee, nobody ever trusts because of their history. You got Philly that's trying to make it happen, but they don't have that elite history. If you go out west, the Clippers, to me, are the only squad that if you finally start believing that they've figured out their own internal stuff, you could make an argument of, okay, that's the group that will upend a team like the Lakers based on the experience that is supposed to matter this time of year. Because other than that, it's a total kind of just throw it at the dartboard experience. You got Brooklyn, which we don't know what to think about. We got Phoenix. We got Utah. Everybody's got holes in their argument. AD, though, specifically, Bill, how huge was it to see, the last two nights, the way he's played? He has that turnaround dunk off the lob last night mm-hmm. where he screams, I'm back. It seems like he's found himself. And like you said, that championship mentality again.
Well, it's been interesting because AD hasn't been himself all year. You go back to before the calf injury, he's only averaging like 21 points a game this season, which is his lowest since, his second year, I want to say, in New Orleans. So, he really hasn't been at the level he was at in the bubble last year. And
best player in basketball in the bubble, maybe.
Arguably, yeah, he was incredible. I think you would objectively say he was the Lakers' best player throughout that entire playoff run. LeBron
which
is
would
LeBron.
Probably make
but,
him the best player sure. in the playoffs.
Sure.
We were talking MVP coming into the season.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And the funny thing is it was flipped. It was like, although, LeBron ends up getting the high ankle sprain, but coming into the season, we were talking about very short layoff, right? Remember just because the offseason was so
give
short.
Give LeBron the rest, let AD carry the load. Yep.
Yes. This is setting up to be AD's MVP season. And it almost seemed like he leaned into the idea of, this short offseason, I've never gone through it. And it was flipped. Like Davis was the guy early on, like even before he goes out with the Achilles issue, he wasn't very good, defensively, that was a big issue early in the season. And then LeBron carried the load. Obviously, LeBron has the freak accident. Where I can understand that your opinion on the Lakers has flipped over the last week is purely Davis, right? We're talking it's a team thing. It's really just Anthony Davis kind of looks like himself for the first time
all season.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Hey, Fidelity. What's it cost to invest with the Fidelity app?
Start with as little as $1 with no account fees or trade commissions on U.S. stocks and ETFs.
That's music to my ears.
I can only talk.
Investing involves risk, including risk of loss. Zero account fees apply to retail brokerage accounts only. $0 commission applies to online U.S. equity trades and ETFs and retail Fidelity accounts. Sell order assessment fee not included. Some account types and securities excluded. Details at fidelity.com/commissions. Fidelity Brokerage Services LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Well, and Anthony Davis playing at an MVP level is enough to transform a team's prospects in the postseason. And you know, the last two games, he's wanted it. Like, he has really wanted it. You've seen him be ultra aggressive. He's gotten to his spots. Like, his timing has looked way better. You know, last night, people were making jokes about it on Twitter. Anthony Davis, love seeing you dive for an offensive rebound, but please never hit the deck like that ever again. But I mean,
right.
You watch those final minutes, the Suns were making a run and they had a couple
beating Chris Paul to a loose ball, by the way. Sorry right. for interrupting.
And the Suns had a couple of threes that would have brought it to five. Like, there was a chance that the Lakers could have blown that. Like, it was a little bit tense. And the fact that he's hitting the deck, you know, on that play you're talking about, like a little bit of a tip out offensive rebound to secure an extra position, a possession with 90 seconds left in that game. Just ultra playoff intensity. Chasing, running back to get the block on the three on Jay Crowder from the corner. And then that led to the reverse lob dunk. And it was play after play after play. CP knocked him into the boards at one point. I mean, it just was like from AD, it was just an unbelievable, and he kept getting up. You know what I mean? He just kept getting up and making another play. And whether it was getting to the line, you know, he shot 15 free throws. To me, it was just a really determined performance from AD. And he hasn't had that sort of mindset really throughout this season. Like, it's kind of like he's been waiting for the right time to get to it. And I always question, like, well, if you're waiting for like the right time, are you going to be able to turn it on when that time arrives? And you know, we've seen it. I think he's been back for 11 games since coming back from the calf. The Lakers have only won three of them. But his performance over these last three, I think, is more important than the results. And, you know, if this is AD for the rest of the way, and then LeBron comes back and is, you know, LeBron, you know, the Lakers are not going to go away meekly, which a week ago I thought they were kind of trying to evaluate their spirit and the way they were playing and approaching games kind of felt like they were going to fold.
So here's where I still would be waving, maybe not a red flag, you know, call it a yellow flag, whatever you want to call it. But AD being back is huge. LeBron, we'll see how he feels. But Bill, you and I have talked at length, you know, over the course of the past year or so about, okay, the old iteration of the Lakers when it comes to the others, as Shaq always likes to call them. I trusted last year's team a hell of a lot more than I do this year's team. And I think all three of us have similar wiring when it comes to covering the game and the players, that you pay very close attention to, you know, state of mind of each player, where each player's at in their career, you know, connectivity humanly between the group. And so on the Lakers front, you know, I'm thinking about, you got a Rajon Rondo on the team last year, a Dwight Howard, guys like that, even a Jared Dudley, who's such a good spirit on the bench. And you had this idea, this mentality that, okay, even though the whole basketball world has crowned the Clippers unofficially, we're going to go out and kind of flip the script and win this thing. And so they did that. Now, man, I got all kinds of questions that I want you to dive in on about the role guys, because you've got the big man situation that you wrote about really well recently, you know, with Montrezl Harrell, Marc Gasol, Andre Drummond, you know, all three of them seemingly equally discontent, you know, not that they're saying it every night, but nobody's getting the kind of minutes they would truly like. Nobody's kind of getting the kind of touches they would truly like, but it doesn't end there. I mean, I'm looking at the roster right here and it's like, as far as where each guy's at, okay, Dennis Schroeder didn't get the extension he wanted, thinking about free agency. Kyle Kuzma has been a great soldier and been compromising and changing his game. But there's part of me that kind of says, like, and he's obviously now dealing with a back injury as well. But I don't know where, you know, kind of where Kuz is at in the context of this whole group. They just don't seem to have this unity in terms of shared mission. I know that sounds overly simplistic, but I feel like that what could get them in the end is during the postseason, where are their heads at, and can they really come together in the kind of way they're going to have to?
I think what's going to be interesting is if they don't repeat or if they don't make a deep run, like we're going to have to go back and look at the decision the Lakers made in the offseason to completely, you know, rebuild that supporting cast. You know, the decision to not bring back Dwight, the decision to take a different tack with the big men, to go get Marc Gasol and embrace, you know, the spacing and the playmaking that he brought, and kind of give up on the verticality and rim protection that you had with JaVale and Dwight. There was just so much turnover for a returning champion, and especially with a short offseason. I wonder. I mean, listen, we all thought the Lakers had a home run of an offseason. They got better on paper, no question. But there was always in the back of my mind, with a short offseason, how valuable could that continuity have been if you could have just kept it together? They would have been old. That was an old team that won. And I think that was what they were trying to avoid, you know, kind of, you know, getting into a rut and just running out of steam. And so I understand the thinking there. But, you know, there were a lot of new pieces coming together that had to coalesce with almost no practice time, no training camp. And then you end up with the injuries that make it even harder. Dennis Schroeder has talked about, even before the injuries and before he obviously went out with the health and safety protocols, that he was still figuring out where guys liked the ball, where guys, you know, wanted the ball on the floor. And we're talking like 30, 35 games into the season because there hadn't been practices. And so that's different. And, you know, the one that I think, you know, again, we don't know how to evaluate this yet because we haven't seen him with LeBron and AD over an extended period of time. But the Andre Drummond addition has really been the fly in the ointment for the Lakers season, I think, where you look at the way they were playing with Marc Gasol before he went out with the health and safety protocols. He ended up catching COVID in the middle of the season. I think they were 21-6 with him as a starter. And then they, you know, Andre Drummond hits the market. Gasol's out with COVID, and you try to reinvent the wheel a little bit. You've got a guy who, you know, comes with a really high profile, you know, a lot better in the counting stats, you know, big rebounding numbers, you know, been an all-star, and you get kind of seduced by that, I think. And the question is,
didn't you report that part of Andre's coming to town was, yeah, he had to start. That was part, to me, that jumped off the page when I read that. I mean, that's politically, that's a problem.
Well, and it's not like you went and got Andre Drummond for depth, right? You like if you were like, we're gonna have three centers, we're gonna stick with our rotation, but you know, now we have the guy who is big and can protect the rim and go get rebounds and helps in different matchups. You've basically, you know, thrown a wrench in the gears of your big man rotation. Marc Gasol was not happy. He seems to have embraced it a little bit more. He's playing now. He's played the backup minutes in the last two games, but now you've got Montrezl Harrell, a guy who, you know, has talked very openly about, you know, his, you know, issues in his personal life and like his own, just what he's going through a lot. And then you take, you know, basketball has kind of been this refuge for him. And now his like minutes aren't reliable. Like, I think he's kind of a guy who you have to be careful with, I don't know the right word, but like you have to make sure you're taking care of him too. So there's a lot of really delicate factors for his Lakers spirit, with their big man rotation. His spirit. There you go. Yeah. And I just don't know if Andre Drummond has been good enough that you would say that it was all worth it. Like, I don't know that he has made the Lakers meaningfully better in the way you would have expected. But again, how do you know when you haven't seen him with LeBron and Anthony Davis? But, you know, I mean, he has, I don't know. Slater, I'd be curious for your input here on Drummond, because it just hasn't been a difference maker. But also the Lakers have been in total chaos. But they also are just way better with Marcus. The offense is so much better with Marcus Gasol on the floor. Yeah. It's just night and day.
Honestly, I think come playoff time, let's say they're in game four of a first round series with Phoenix and they're down 2-1. I trust Frank Vogel to just play the right guy. If he's starting Marcus Gasol over Andre Drummond, and that hurts Drummond's feelings or makes it less likely that Drummond will be there next season, I think Frank Vogel showed during last year's playoffs he'll do it. You know, he was flexible. That's like, he had a really good playoffs coaching last season, not only just with, you know, series to series and in series scheme adjustments, but it was like JaVale McGee would randomly be starting, then he'd go to DNP. Dwight Howard suddenly became a huge part of the Nuggets series and his minutes went up. Okay, he makes less sense in the Rockets series. No Dwight Howard. And I think Frank Vogel will do that. They obviously promised Drummond the starting job because he wouldn't have come regardless. And to them, he was the most high profile, best player on the market. But I think when it comes down to it in the playoffs, they're not going to care about that promise.
But I do think that last year's group, you had the kinds of individuals who are more likely to buy in and embrace those roles, where you had Dwight Howard, who, you know, kind of reinvented himself and kind of really became sort of this like dirty work, do anything guy, you know, wasn't on an NBA team by August going into that season. I mean, the Lakers were kind of his redemption opportunity. And you know, JaVale McGee had kind of been through it similarly with the Warriors, so he kind of knew what to expect. The personalities are just a lot different. I mean, Marc Gasol, you know, prideful guy, has started his entire career, you know, Hall of Famer. All of a sudden, is he going to be benched for entire series? Montrezl Harrell, reigning Sixth Man of the Year, and then Andre Drummond, who still views himself as a superstar. I think the personalities are make it a little tougher this year.
They're different, but the situation is somewhat similar. We're like, Andre Drummond's kind of trying to revive his value. You know, and Montrezl Harrell didn't get the payday he probably thought he was getting in free agency. He will. To me, the big question, you know, we're talking big man, and I know we've talked a ton about the big man, you know, on the Forum Club, the podcast we do, Bill. Schroeder is supposed to be their third guy, right? I mean, he's the one they really spent their valuable tool this offseason, which was Danny Green's contract in a trade plus a first round pick to get him. And I believe you and Jovan have reported offered him like a pretty big money extension that he turned down. Now he's heading into the playoffs, obviously believing he's entering a payday, but he's like, when's the last time he played a game?
I mean, it's been a week, maybe. I mean, the question at this point is whether or not he'll be back in time for the for this weekend against the Pacers and Pelicans. Frank Vogel said that there was some hope that he'd be back, but you know, obviously we haven't talked to him about his circumstances, but you know, it's a 10 to 14 day window. We generally know what that means. So you think there's going to be at least some sort of, you know, time for him to get his conditioning back up.
Depends on how bad of an experience he has.
You can't just take the 10 to 14 day window as gospel with those circumstances. So, I mean, it's all over the map.
I cover a guy, Damian Lee, who, just announced, you know, he had coronavirus. He's like still getting over some brain fog. He's going to have to get a chest scan this week. Like, he doesn't sound close, even though he's now negative of coronavirus. Like, he doesn't sound close to a return. So, like you said, you don't know with that. But, you know, Schroeder, I assume, is going to push himself to try to get back onto the court if he can, because he's one of the, I mean, Sam, you're doing free agency rankings. Schroeder's considered, where did you put him?
We so he slid into our top 10. Because some other guys had kind of fallen off, but it's a fascinating point guard free agency market where, yeah, if I'm Frank Vogel, you know, I'm watching Dennis real closely to kind of make sure that in the first round and the second round, if they make it in the playoffs, that he's not thinking about his bag and his kind of cheddar rather than the team, because you got the Kyle Lowry's, Chris Paul's. It's like this point guard market with a bunch of old heads that are still playing at a high level. And guys that are going to get paid. But if you're Dennis, you might have an opportunity to just kind of slide in there and say, okay, but I'm 4 years younger than this guy. I play both ends of the floor. You know, he's smaller than, other than CP, you know, he's one of the smaller point guards on the market. And so, you know, it's one of those point guard markets where I think the gap between the guys that really get paid and who end up probably having to take whatever's left over is going to be, in their game is really small, but in their contract is probably going to be really big, because there are only a couple teams that are really going to pay. And then a guy like Dennis could be in a tough spot, all of which could enter his mind as they're trying to get through the postseason.
They were willing to trade him at the deadline for Kyle Lowry. He knows that too. That's
right.
You know, that's a part of this whole mix too. That's what makes his situation very interesting to me.
Well, and then Lowry comes in and, you know, you know, pokes a stick in the Lakers' eye on Sunday in that game last week. You know, and obviously that was the first day that Schroeder was out with the protocols, and LeBron ends up getting hurt. So there was a whole lot going on that day. But I mean,
right. That's Lowry when Bill cooking, started just shoveling cooking. Dirt. That was the day.
Well, I mean, it's like last night you're watching the Lakers and you're just thinking about it. It's like, what if we look back on this season? They're like, you know, the Lakers wouldn't trade to Talen Horton Tucker for Kyle Lowry. You know, like, I mean, in 5 years we'll look back on this like totally different than you did on at the trade deadline. It's just a. It's you just never know in real time like what the right choice is.
All right, Slater, let's throw it your way with your dubs. We don't obviously know if the Lakers and Warriors are going to meet in that play-in game, but regardless, the
of
Warriors
course we
are,
know. Of course we yes, know that's going to happen.
Exactly. Adam Silver is not going to get any sleep the night before that game. You know, the Warriors are interesting to me because they keep, for one, like having Oklahoma City on the schedule a couple times late in the year has created this opening where, I mean, listen, Steph's scoring on everybody, but all of a sudden we're getting more near 50-point games out of Steph. We're getting a Warriors team that if you just glance at the box and you see a 39-point win, you feel like there's an element of dominance there and danger for a team like the Lakers.
I think the Kings might have just beaten the Thunder by about 30 points. So.
That's exactly the point. So, like, the question would just be, because you're watching them closer than anybody, what do you think of them collectively right now and how dangerous, you know, they might be going into the play-in? And then we just got to talk Steph, man, because whether you talk about Steph in the context of MVP or just, you know, legacy and career, I know those are overused
scoring
terms.
Title. Like,
scoring title. Well, all right, let's go there. So I looked at this today. Unfortunately, this incredibly epic scoring race that has been so much fun just kind of took a hit because Bradley Beal has got a hamstring problem and is out for two games. I think I was sleeping on the fact that because it was so close between Beal and Steph for the title, that the gap between the two of them with Steph in the lead for the past 6 weeks is bigger than I realized. If you go back to March 29th, Steph Curry coming in at a cool 37.2 points a game to Beal's 31.6. I mean, he has been on one all year, but this past stretch in particular has just been historic stuff. What are you seeing?
They've gone small. You know, the Wiseman injury is kind of a pivot point in their season. They leaned into the veteran identity. They took some of their other younger guys out of the rotation, and they just went for it because their second overall pick was no longer there to prioritize development. And now they're playing this spread style, and he's jacking up 23s a game sometimes, and he's making them at 50% or better. I mean, he's made, since the start of April, he's made 136 threes. I believe the next closest guy in the league is at like 80. He just made, 96 in April, which was 14 more than anybody's ever made in a calendar month. Like, he has, he's taken this stuff to just another level. I could keep throwing wild stats, but I think 5 out of his last 15 games, he's made 10 or more threes, and nobody, in history has. I think Klay Thompson's the next most of making 10 threes in a game. He's done it 5 times in his entire career. So it's just, it's crazy stuff. But at the same time,
I'm sure you saw this, but Warriors PR man Ray Rader had an interesting tweet the other day, basically quantifying the fact that a no hitter was more, was less of an oddity than a 10 three-pointer game. And it's obviously a little bit apples to oranges, but underscoring the fact that what Steph is doing is just something we don't see.
You know what it reminds me of, though? It reminds me a little bit, it's an even really more impressive version of it. But remember Damian Lillard in the bubble last year, Bill, when Portland was just like needed to win every game to get in the playoffs, and Lillard was just going on these tears. I think he had a 60-pointer at one point, and he just, clutch moments. And at the time, the Lakers were kind of, they were the one seed, but they were kind of just floating into the playoffs without any stakes. And the thought going in was like, wow, have you seen Lillard? Like, they could really scare the Lakers. And then you got into the playoffs against a good veteran, deep team that schemed it up, was really physical with Lillard. You know, Damian still had numbers, but like they were just, it was a really kind of like a one-man offense against a team. And that to me seems to be where this Warriors thing is going, where like this is a moment for Steph Curry. This season has been a moment. I mean, he's going to get the scoring title. We don't need to talk Curry legacy, but like what he's done this season has cemented himself as what, like probably a top 15 player ever. But at the same time, if we are just talking about this season's team, they're thin. They're playing an 8-man rotation that includes, a two-way guy, a couple of like, more fringe NBA players. They're about to bring Jordan Bell back, by the way, Sam Amick, on a two-way as they...
baby.
Lakers great Jordan Bell.
As they convert JTA to a full roster spot, but they're not, to me, even if they get through the play-in, they're probably going to face Utah or Phoenix, which, by the way, they're facing the next two nights. In one point you'd say, oh, you're for Phoenix and Utah, you don't want to see that Warriors brand. You don't want to see Curry for, 10 straight days because he might just like have a crazy streak. But at the same time, they're just, to me, not deep enough to realistically believe they're going to threaten a team like Utah in a playoff series, because you're just going to tire them out, and they're thin and short.
So maybe not in a playoff. Yeah, thin and short. But that's where it's interesting, right? Like the playoff series, I agree with you. But you're talking about Lillard and how the Lakers really the Lakers had them figured out. You know, the Blazers won game one of that series. The Rockets won game one of the second round series. And, you know, that's why, like, with the Lakers, you know, LeBron might have two, maybe three games under his belt. I mean, I suppose four if he plays two back-to-backs coming off the injury. But, you know, this team is not going to have a lot of continuity. And then you have to go look at a red-hot Steph on a one-night-only sort of affair. And, you know, it's just – that's where the play-in is so interesting. Like, I expect the Lakers to get through the play-in.
Aisha did not like how you said that, Bill. Steph on a one-night-only sort of affair. That took my mind a completely different place. That's slander. Let's not – sorry.
Sam's having quite the morning.
I got derailed. I apologize. Go ahead. Stop staring at me, Bill. You're now judging me for my – stop, Bill. What do you – put your glasses on. What are you doing?
The one thing about the play-in – the one thing about the play-in is, you know, if you're in the 7-8, it's a free swing. And to me, like, from a Warriors perspective, even if you don't beat the Lakers, you're going to get a home game against probably Memphis. You know, first of all, they have to play Memphis Sunday to even face the Lakers. But I think the Warriors are probably going to get through the play-in. I was more talking like, you know, if they do get in a
playoff. No, your point on a series is legit. I mean, you know, even obviously it's not going to be a Lakers thing, but a team like the Lakers, Bill, you've seen their defense all year long. And to your points later, those kinds of defenses, which to the Lakers' credit, they still have that level of a defense, even though they're bringing up the back end of the standings. But the Utahs and the Phoenixes are going to schematically be able to probably handle Steph. And he'll, you know, like you said, like Damian was around that 30-plus mark, but it didn't have the overall impact. Bill, you shook your head on the defensive front, and maybe I'm guilty of not. I mean, they've been dropping games. Is that defense falling off the cliff a bit in the past couple of weeks?
It did over that stretch when they were losing games, when they lost 6 out of 7. I mean, it got to 8 out of 10. They've gotten it back a little bit. You know, they obviously against Denver, they were you know, pretty impressive. Held Denver under 90 points. I don't remember what the number was, but I mean, it was they really locked in on Jokic. And so I think the Lakers defense is going to be fine, but I'm just saying we've seen it take a hit and swoon a little bit. But I mean, I'd have to look. I think do they sell the number one defense? They have.
They're tied, like, with
throughout this whole stretch.
Which, yeah, by the way,
okay. So, like, but I mean, after 2 months of having their, you know, two most important players, that they've been able to maintain that, and that they've only slipped into a tie at this point is pretty incredible. I think a testament to, you know, various factors, but I mean, starting with Frank Vogel.
Yeah, I mean, not having Davis to the Lakers, you would think would be like the Jazz not having Gobert, essentially. And yeah, they've stayed afloat. That is impressive by Vogel. But to be honest, like, Davis has to be Davis defensively in the playoffs for them to actually have a, like, top level playoff defense, because that's very different.
No question. All right, gentlemen. I think I'm going to let you go on that note. We talked Lakers. We talked Warriors. We made Adam Silver a little bit nervous. That made all the rest of us excited. I would love to see it. I would love to see it more in the arena, in locker rooms, back to doing what we do for a living. CC Adam Silver, but more on that some other time. But thank you guys for coming on. I appreciate you.
Can we talk about, Sam, how you hold your mic like Draymond? Can that be a part of the podcast? Like, you're just sitting chill here, like, letting it fly.
It's a little it's Dirk Nowitzki to me. Remember what Dirk after playoff games used to do that?
It's Jokic. Remember Jokic in his playoff moment when he couldn't recreate, when he went like this and then just threw the thing down, and Bill's now filming me. Bill, you have an innate ability to make me uncomfortable on my own podcast. You're doing a great job.
Before we get out of here on this podcast, can we talk about hot, you know, Sam Amick writing steaming Nikola Jokic columns? That was...
I don't normally get triggered. Bill would probably disagree. I get triggered too often in my normal everyday life. But I looked at Twitter the other day, and it's funny because, and Andrew can decide if we leave this on the pod. I don't know if we're still going or not, but... yeah, Nick Wright at Fox Sports, I typically enjoy quite a bit. It doesn't mean I didn't enjoy, you know, what he had to say the other day, but specifically, he not only was talking about Chris Paul for MVP, but on the Jokic front, had made a statement that historically Jokic would be the worst MVP in the last 35 years. And I'm a sucker for, like, I think what got under my skin is the general premise that we could ever evaluate a modern day MVP in the scope of history. Now, if it's LeBron, fine. Guys like that who are near the back end of their career, fine. But I think what it showed, whether it was Nick or anybody else, and I will say it, like this is more of a mainstream media thing, is that people have not paid enough attention to Jokic's first five seasons. Like that's all there is to it, you know, because for anybody to act like this is an out of left field product of the pandemic season MVP candidacy is just completely off base. This dude was fourth. Was it fourth a couple years ago in MVP voting? Maybe third. You know, he's been in the race before. He's doing things that certainly no big man have ever done. Wilt Chamberlain, like I mentioned in the column, had that one season, 67-68, where he basically decided to go show the world that he could lead the league in assists, and he did, but that wasn't part of his game consistently. So, yeah, I'm just not really here for the Jokic slander and the idea that he's kind of, you know, doing a backdoor entry here on the MVP race.
He proved himself in the playoffs last year, too. He took, it was him and Murray, but, like, he took them to the West Finals, deep in the West Finals. You know, he kind of, that was probably the biggest scare the Lakers got in the bubble.
I mean, you can argue that they were that AD, you know, game-winning three away from being down 2-1 in that series. So right. It's just.
And he's also, I'm a sucker also for the, statistically, historically, every way we measure impact, he's leading the pack right now. You then have an incredible, whether you call it narrative or just the story, this dude has been a leader this year. This guy could have given up on Michael Porter Jr. Instead, he's been a leader as a veteran with him, gotten some of the best along with Michael Malone out of Michael Porter Jr. Jamal Murray goes down. I mean, how you guys know this, the way a locker room functions, when a player of Jamal's caliber goes down, you know, the other guy who is an alpha male in the locker room, in this case, Jokic, sets the tone. So if Jokic would have come in and acting like, all right, well, that's a rep because, you know, none of y'all are as good as this guy who we just lost, then the Nuggets would slide. Well, instead, they won 10 out of 12, and Jokic, you know, took it to another level, and other guys around him played well too. So I love his MVP year, and I think he's well-deserving. And just I don't like the idea that you can already tell that it's getting framed as if there's going to be some kind of asterisk, you know, tied to it.
That's going to happen too. If Utah wins the championship, or if, you know, if Phoenix wins the championship, it's going to, I feel like, and it would have happened last year in the bubble if someone other than LeBron had won the championship.
If LeBron wins it again, then it won't happen this year. Then it's going to be how incredible. And I mean, that's a good
point. It's just a double standard that, you know, that we live in. It's almost like, you know, Jokic winning it once or the Jazz winning one championship. It's like, now you've got to go do it in a subsequent year.
Right.
You know, doing it once in these circumstances isn't going to be good enough to convince people that it was legitimate. But that is a conversation for another day.
Indeed, indeed.
Next week, Sam, we're going to be having playoff matchup conversations, play-in. You know, I was just looking at where Denver is. You know, they'd be in a 4-5 with Dallas. We could be talking about that series.
It's a great series, by the way.
Absolutely. All right, Bill Orem, your future is bright. Keep those shades on, brother. Thank you for joining us. Mr. Slater, as always, appreciate you. See you, boys.
Thanks, guys.